This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and Kevin Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181. And welcome, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. Good to see you again. And welcome to my guest, Deke Cox, Lieutenant Commander One Each. Glad to have you here. Actually, you know, Deke is always, I always have to have him on the phone because he's a working man, but today he's off and he's here with us, and I'm really glad to see him.
Welcome,
now,
Deke.
I'm also going to welcome Judd Blakely, my good buddy from Common Sense Campaign and retired Marine and Vietnam veteran, who is now filming this for us, okay? So we have, an opportunity to do more than just talk on the radio, and I'm excited about that, and that's what we're going to do. So before we get going, I just want to just kind of, you know, set the stage for what I want to try to do today. Deke is a wealth, he is just a resource that has a wealth of information about all sorts of different things. So I want to try to do a scattergun approach on issues, okay? In my show, usually we talk about maybe two or three issues, and sometimes we only get to one issue because I keep talking about stuff. But nevertheless, the point today will be to cover, you know, some, I think, important issues. And I've asked Deke to go ahead and just add or delete from my agenda. So I don't know what he's going to say. He could say, Lou, you know, this is what I want to talk about, and by God, I'm going to do it. Okay, so, and that's how, you know, naval intelligence guys who serve with the SEALs are, and I understand that. So I will be completely cooperative if he takes over the show.
I don't believe that, but perhaps.
Okay. I mean, we'll work it out. But here again, the number of issues that are out there are incredible. I mean, whether it's the local, and that's one of the, we're going to do a local segment, we're going to do a state segment, and we're going to do national and an international segment. So. I'm asking for a lot, but I think that if you don't ask, you ain't going to get. So let's kick it off. All right, Lieutenant Commander Deke One Each, what is your sense of what's going on locally with our local school board and an 1819 article that came out a couple of weeks ago that showed that the use of gender pronouns was part and parcel of what was going on here in Baldwin. Of course, Superintendent Tyler immediately had a press release out there that said, no, that's not the case. So what's your sense of it? You've had kids in the school there. I know they're not in the school system this year, but where do you come down on this?
Yeah, so, you know, Superintendent Tyler is, you know, showing his chameleon colors again. As we've seen him on myriad issues over the years, and you know, gender pronouns are, you know, it's like we're playing checkers when other people are playing chess, right? It's important, but when you look at, for instance, his performance on CRT and the school board's performance on CRT, where they adamantly insisted that it wasn't in the system for years or in the curriculum, but then we found that it was, and not just a little bit, but a lot, where they were actually instructing you know, our children, fourth graders, you know, over at Fairhope Intermediate, now Fairhope East, you know, to commit sacrilege to the flag, you know, by, you know, drawing other types of flags other than the United States flag. I mean, you know, I mean that's just one.
Let's imagine it a different flag.
Yes, yeah. Let's imagine a different flag. That's right. And so this was, this was a year into COVID when I found that on the walls in my children's school. You know,
right.
And at that moment, I said, you know, we're done. You know,
what exactly were they asked to do concerning the flag?
Yeah, so I've got the picture here, and so what the children were tasked to do in the assignment was. The title of the assignment was My New American Flag, okay? And this was in November, December of 2020, and the exhibit stayed up for a couple of months there on the fourth grade hall by Ms. Mitchell's classroom, you know? And you know, we immediately voiced our concerns to Cecil Christenberry, our local, you know, school board rep, and others, and had a meeting with Cecil and Robert Stewart, you may remember, Lou, you were in on that call. And, you know, and so the way it was handled the way that things are often handled here in Baldwin, which is that it was behind closed doors, not transparent. And of course, we were never advised, you know, or informed what was actually done about the issue.
Right.
You know, only that the exhibit came down in February of 21, and then nothing else was ever said. And so when we look at CRT, when we look at, you know, the 1819 article, there's a great article in the National Review, you know, that just came out this morning talking about, you know, AP standards, you know, advanced placement standards, and the teaching of Black history and basically how they're continuing to politicize and train young activists to be leftist activists, you know, through approved high school AP curriculum. It's egregious, and you know it. You know, to think that this is just about gender pronouns is, you know, is just barely scraping the surface.
Yeah, there's no question the bigger picture there. And I think DeSantis, that article really talked about how DeSantis has a law that is going to stop wokeism. And, of course, he says, you know, wokeism is going to die in Florida. And so you have that sort of basic legal support to stop what's going on. And my point has been that we have a similar set of laws, maybe not as definitive as what DeSantis has said, and certainly from Kay Ivey, we are not going to get any ideological pushback on any of this, okay? But we can still do what we're doing, and I would use as a lead-in what Common Sense Campaign's team from South Baldwin has done with the Studies Weekly. I mean, Studies Weekly is the main source of academic material for this wonderful, you know, history program that our kids need. Mm-hmm. So from fourth through sixth grade, Studies Weekly is the main source. And what is it? It is a left-wing rag. And that's where we have a meeting on Thursday with the academic dean, Dr. Carter. And I'm hoping that we can convince her that this is something that we've got to stop. And we'll see how this goes. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is in Alabama, look at the drag queen show in Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's there. And when we got into a big argument...
Now, hang on. Was that the Christmas drag queen special? The one that
visited 18
cities? Oh, no.
This preceded.
Cities,
this preceded.
Oh, okay.
That one.
Right.
This was before. And we still haven't heard anything from them on that. And that's going to be our next fight over, you know, with Dr. Wayne Reynolds, who is now the president of the state school board. So we're going to tackle that, but these issues, and again, the history of the issues that we've had over here, vaccine mandates, you know, mask mandates, all of those things are just below the surface waiting to pop right up. And I think that's why we have got to be able to stay on top of these local issues. And it's one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk about this with you, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know that, and you know, let's put it this way. Even though your kids are in a Catholic school now, the fact of the matter is, 10 years ago, we had people from Common Sense go to the archdiocese here and basically ask them to remove Common Core from the diocesan schools. The bishop said no.
Yeah, they still haven't done it.
They still haven't done it.
No, I was looking at my oldest son's textbooks last night, and it even says, you know, on the very front cover of one of his texts, you know, compliant with Common Core.
Right. Especially in math.
Yeah, it was the math text. Yeah.
But you see, that's part and parcel of it. If the Catholic Church here is not willing to stand up and fight because all of this is antithetical to everything the Catholic Church believes in, then what in the hell
or
are
say,
we doing?
Say that they
or
believe
they say
in.
They believe
right.
it. Well, of course, you know, John Kerry and Pelosi and mm-hmm. Biden can all go to communion, but whatever. All right. Mm-hmm. But this is part and parcel of the fight. And I do think that, you know, you're in a position at St. Michael's to now really kind of ease yourself into that and make that voice heard that says, look, we have got to make sure that we're not following down the road of what the public schools are doing.
That's right. I mean, I want to be clear, you know, that, you know, and respectful to the, you know, to the archdiocese and to, you know, the fact that, you know, it's the reason why I made this decision to move was because it was so much worse in public school, right?
It
really is. And when we talk about local issues and 32,000 kids in Baldwin County, you know, and so many more nation or statewide, you know, is that these kids are captive in a system, you know, that is not servicing their need. They, you know, they don't even assign homework anymore. You know, they don't check it anymore. I mean, it is appalling how the standardized test scores have dropped, and nobody even really seems to mind or care. Right? They blame it on COVID and keep going. And so, you know, this is we must continue to wake up and, you know, and awaken people to the urgent need, because like I said, you know, there's so much more that on your, you know, agenda for today that we're going to go through. But, you know, again, we're playing checkers while other people are playing chess, you know, and the Chinese are playing Go. Right.
And the whole thing about this is that this is where Obama's fundamental change comes into play, because if you're going to change the system, then you've got to get to the kids, reprogram them into all of this anti-American, we're misogynist, homophobic, you know, imperialist, racist, and all the rest of it. That's what they're learning. And so they may be American kids, but there's no guarantee, particularly when they're trying to draw this wall between parents and kids, that your influence on these kids is not going to overwhelm what they're the stuff that they're getting out of schools.
Well, and let me comment on that real quick, Lou, is that look at Kurtz's article in National Review today about, you know, about the AP standards, right? And how, and the way that they do this is that they have this secret process with a board that doesn't discuss or invite public comment. It's a board of elitist academics, you know.
This is exactly the same thing that gave us Common Core.
Right, but here's the thing. It's a board of chosen elitists.
Yes.
Okay, who keep their proceedings secret, all right? And if you ask for a copy of their draft, you know, comments on whatever is proposed in the curriculum or in the teacher's plan, the lesson plan, they will not give it to you. We basically have to wait for it to be leaked or published in its final form, and so there's no comment. But here's how they do it. Like in this AP course on African studies, right, is that what they're doing is that they don't even allow even traditional liberal views, or conservative views to even be mentioned, to filter in, to offer a juxtaposition of ideas and the currency of ideas. You know, it's not even there. And again, Kurtz, it's a long article, but if you have access to it, folks, you know, I encourage you to read it, just because it's so enlightening on where we are in academic process right now. And so, so we have to understand that, you know, my decision to move my children out of public schools was based off of drastically falling standards in public schools, and it's a real shame, because Baldwin really, Baldwin and Fairhope schools in particular really had, you know, top 10 performance, and you know, they might still be ranked that by some, but my personal view as a parent, no, failing badly, and I am not going to stand by and let my children be indoctrinated.
Right. And you know, to that point of indoctrination, that's part and parcel of what you're getting with the 1619 Project, CRT, all of those things, which are being challenged, surprisingly, from Princeton, you know, history department. Some of those professors are taking it up. But my point here is that we have got to make sure that the indoctrination stops in the public school system. Okay.
That's
what we're trying to do.
So it starts by saying no. Okay, and standing up and telling people no, and it's what I try and teach my sons, you know, is that, you know, you must stand up and make your positions known. You must, you know, if you don't agree with something, you know, you must stand up and be prepared to defend in the most articulate, best informed manner based on the facts that you can, you know, but it takes a whole lot more people standing up and saying no, and just continuously no, no, no. And, you know, you mentioned Governor DeSantis. I served with you know, him in Special Task Force in Iraq. And he was our judge advocate general. He was a young lieutenant, right? Mm-hmm. Young Lieutenant Jag, and you know, naval officer, and fantastic. You know, he was the guy that we had to route our proposed direct action plans, if we'd been given a task.
Make sure you get the legal
approval. Get the blessing for legal. And so, you know, Governor DeSantis is top-notch, and he knows what he is doing, and he is out there. You can bet that, and the American people can bet, that he is absolutely going to have their best interest at heart. What I'm watching is just to see, you know, what the establishment, the conservative establishment, attempts to do to him.
Right.
You know,
just like they did to Trump with all this stuff.
Yeah. Just like they did, although Trump gave them myriad and plentiful opportunities.
I mean, DeSantis is on a different level of that because he just plays them.
That's right. And so, when it will be interesting to see, who tries to take him out and how.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of shift to another topic, mm-hmm. okay? And this is on the state level. And again, look, we could spend all morning on this, and we're almost there. As it is, I mean, Lori's going to be hitting the button here soon, you know. Yeah, get on with this thing. All right,
you've got 35
no extra
minutes.
Time today, Lou. Get on with it. All right, so the state level issue that has been really kind of centerpiece for us is election integrity. Mm. And although the state has a reputation for the gold standard of election integrity, the reality is something completely different. And so, in our meeting that we had at Clanton over the weekend of the Alabama Conservative Coalition, we had several different speakers, one of whom was Greg Phillips, the fame he has gotten from 2,000 Mules, but then, which he gives you the big picture ideas of what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But in the trenches, we had a former Lee County election manager, okay? And he spent 6 years doing that, and now he's still working for Lee County as their attorney and tax assessment and things like that. But he gave an analysis of the details that make anyone have to think twice about the gold standard reputation we have, okay? Mm-hmm. So part of that has to do with the ESNS, which is the systems that we use. Florida uses it too. Florida does do Dominions, which I didn't realize until I started to look at what they were doing. But the point is, Dominion has a terrible reputation. ESNS has less of a problem, but the reality from what we've seen is that ESNS is a self-contained entity that provides you with the software to drive the elections, okay? No one knows how that is set up, okay? And the fact is that the machines they use have already been discovered to take any kind of paper. Not the paper that we pay a lot of money for, but any kind of paper. And the most recent example of the ability to, get fake things in there is this county commissioner in good old Perry County.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, using, absentee ballots and others. And somehow they're involved with it. Now, I asked this question to the Lee County guy. Does that suggest that there's someone involved with this? I mean, because the system, and we had people who were actual precinct chapter and heads of their for the election system, and they all said, "Well, this can't happen."
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the line, it did happen, and it's happened before. Shelby County had about 150 different votes tabulated than the number of people who were in there.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you is, what are your thoughts about this going forward for the grassroots folks to try to make sure we're staying on top of this? And with Wes Allen, we do think we have a friend. He just got rid of ERIC, which is the mm-hmm. national system for, getting recordings and making sure that your election rolls are clear, which it didn't work that way, but nevertheless, here we are. So what are your thoughts on that? I know you've been watching all this and seeing what's going on.
Well, it's, we're at the point now, Lou, where we have to understand that so much of what's going wrong in society right now, including with, the COVID response and the vaccines and so many other things, who gets to sit on the school board, who gets to run our elections, okay, that all of that is compromised. You know, the mm-hmm. when you compromise the vote, you compromise the very
foundations
of our democracy.
And that's so apparent after 2020.
Right, I mean, absolutely. You well, know. You and I talked about it in the run-up to 2020. Remember, August, September of 2020, you and I had a conversation, and I said, you know what, if you look at what's going on in the states mm-hmm. and how election law after election law after election law was being bastardized overturned and, you know, often without the imprimatur of the legislature, you know.
Pennsylvania, classic example of that, and Georgia with Stacey Abrams and their stupid consent decree. And this is what is so frustrating about mm-hmm. this. Both Kemp, the governor, and Raffensperger in Georgia could have stopped that. Neither one of them did.
Well, we actually have pictures out of Georgia of Raffensperger with his leftist aide Sterling, you know, actually meeting with, you know, with some of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's paid, you know, leftists.
Right. $400 million.
$429 million
to make sure that everything
right.
went the
I
right
mean,
way.
So, you know, it was, you know, when Republicans, especially rhinos, want to sit around and you know, act as if they don't know what's going on, they're full of it, right? It is just unbelievable. And so you ask me, you know, what my prescriptions might be for that. Well, for one, people have to stand up and contact their representatives, and, you know, and I'm a little jaded about that because we get so little back from that, right? You know, when I called Jerry Carl's office, you know, 10 days ago and asked his assistants in D.C., when was the congressman going to be back in district for a town hall meeting, you know, they didn't know. Okay, they didn't know. They were 3 days into the session, and they didn't know, and that's just not the right answer. Okay, you're telling me that you can't tell a constituent when a representative is going to be back in Baldwin County and in the district, and when we can actually have a meeting, a public meeting with our elected representative. It's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know, and then they wanted to act as if they didn't know about certain things. I mean, this is congressional staff, you know, playing games with constituents. Okay, this is ridiculous, and it's one of those interesting things that if you read Horowitz, right, mm-hmm. who is an absolute, you know, spot on conservative, you know, he calls the Republican Party and the conservative movement what it really is, which is it's a corporate access scheme is what it is. You know, that's all it is. It, you know, they no longer care one iota about, you know, true conservatism and true conservative values, not even, you know, fiscal, you know, for balanced budget. Certainly, you know, less and less about family. You know, where has Jerry Carl been in so many of these discussions about, you know, or public statements about, you know, about mandates and, you know, during COVID and the fact that we're still not out of the woods on that. You know, I mean, he is just nowhere to be seen. And so you know, we go to the federal delegation, but here in the state delegation, you know, it's no better. You know, when we look at what did the Republicans do? What did the new Speaker of the House do immediately at the beginning of the session? You know,
they changed the rules.
Changed the rules, made them more opaque, not more transparent. You know, it's a real problem. And these, you know, the overwhelming sense that we have, you know, as constituents is that they not only don't care. About the constituency, they just don't want to hear from you. They don't want to see you. They don't want to hear from you, and because if they do, then that means responsibility and accountability, and so their answer to that is just to shut you out.
Well, let me just give you a brief example of that. You know, I know that you've been involved with the Eastern Shore Republican Women, and I've always gone there, and up until a few months ago, I always had 2 minutes to talk about things from the perspective of the Tea Party. Okay. Mm-hmm. I went last time that they had at the second Thursday of, I guess, 2 weeks ago. And instead of, I didn't get my 2 minutes, okay, for a variety of reasons, but that's gone by the by. But what was important from the standpoint of communicating with the people who are the guest speakers, in this case, Michael Hoyt, who is the chair of the Republican Party in Baldwin County, instead of asking questions, you had to turn in a paper question. And so my two questions were looked at, and I know they did this. I put, you know, could see what they were doing. And those two questions were not brought up. They don't want to hear an alternative, you know, viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm hoping that tomorrow I'll be able to have an opportunity to speak at the South Baldwin Women, which is generally more conservative. We'll see how that goes. But the point in terms of election integrity here, it seems to me that we have an opportunity with Wes Allen to try to, you know, bring forth to him the issues that have been, you know, brought out over the past couple of years, and see what he can do. According to what we heard from Ed Clanton the other day, he has so much authority that he can just start moving in the direction of ES&S. We want to see what's going on both before the election and mm-hmm. after the election. Where's the oversight of all that? So there are things that can be done.
Well, here's where I think if we need to go. Well, right, and I'm with you on that, but there are two things to say, right? One is you asked about prescriptions, okay? What do I think needs to be done? We have to return to, you know, to ID, you know, voter identification, proper identification, and you know, the accepted standard for what it takes to be you know, certified as a voter, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that we've gotten so far away from that, you know, during the time of COVID, and not returned. Like, okay, COVID is in the rearview mirror, you know, unless you listen to the White House, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the point is, and you know, it's not in the rearview mirror. I want to be clear. There's so much more there. We'll get to that in a moment. But the point is that, you know, you've got to get back to a standard of positive identification of an elector, okay, of a voter. If we cannot do that, because we're barking up the wrong tree. If you want to sit around and play cat and mouse with, you know, with people that are in power, you have to understand, and this is what I would share with our audience, okay? I have seen elections run in other countries and how corrupted they are and how they're easily stolen. Understand, people, that what is going on right now is that our process is corrupted, and both parties are part of it, okay? And the reason why they're part of it is because they benefit. They benefit most directly from staying in power or having those who they choose, not who we would choose, but who they choose, okay, in power. And it is absolutely, you know, it's absolutely, you know, one of the most corrupt and evil things that has ever befallen this democracy. Now, you know, stolen elections are not new in this democracy.
No.
Okay, go
Tammany
back.
Hall is
oh Tammany
is a very
Hall.
Real
oh my
issue.
Goodness! I mean, in New York, they used to show up at the pier as the emigres were getting off the boat from Ellis Island and pay them off on the spot for their vote.
Yeah,
you know, and would give them a house and a job. Right. I mean, this was in the 1800s. You know, early 1900s. So, you know, people need to understand that talking about electronic voting, we recognize the ill. Okay, it the disease is horrible. Okay, but we're addressing it. I feel, you know, is it an argument worth having? Yes, it is. It's a debate worth having, but it's not going to fix it. What must be done is we must insist. We must stand up and insist on a return to proper voter identification.
Right, but doesn't that hinge in part on being able to prove that you're a citizen? And according to my recollection of it, I think 1995, 96. The feds passed a law in federal elections that you don't have to prove that you are a citizen. Now, I mean, that went part and parcel, I think, with Kennedy trying to bring in, change the immigration makeup and all like that. So, I mean, to my way of thinking, they've had this in their mind for a long time, okay? Mm-hmm. And now with 5 million new illegal immigrants and another, depending upon who you want to, you know, choose to listen to, 13 to 20 million illegals that they now want to sanctify as okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this does fundamentally change the electorate, which means that most likely the Democrats are going to be, you know, in power, aside from the fact that they've been stealing the election in 2020 and all like that.
Right.
So, but I guess the real question from the state level, where we have a lot more influence, is that is it your recommendation to move to paper ballots, which in some ways makes sense, but then, you know, there are examples of paper ballots being messed up too. I mean, the system that we had in Louisiana, you went into the voting booth, you pulled these, you know, these levers, mm-hmm. and those were tabulated. There was no electronic thing, it was physically there. And Louisiana may not have had the best record for all that, I get that. But at least we are pretty sure that there was no outside interference. They may have stolen the election by, you know, manipulating what was going on there. But it seems like there's got to be a better way than being beholden to ENSNS and Dominion.
That's right.
And all like that.
Well, I'm with you on that. I think that mechanical imprintation on the ballot with a positive tie to a confirmed balloter, okay, to a confirmed elector, is you know, leaves certainly less room for error and mm-hmm. less room for corruption, you know. But be careful what we ask for, you know, conservatives, because you know what's coming in the medical biosecurity state is that they'll say, well, okay, you know, we'll treat you like they just did at Davos last week, which is you want to enter the Davos area. Well, mm-hmm. now you have to scan. I need to scan your fingerprint to prove who you are. Okay, and the second you give them that kind of data and that kind of power over you, you know, where they own your biometrics,
the game changes.
It absolutely changes. And it's a very slippery slope. And you know, when we look at, you know, the vaccines and vaccine passports and, you know, the fact that that is nowhere near dead. I mean, you know, there were 137 presentations at Davos last week, and 32 of them about climate change, you know, but of those 137 presentations at Davos, you know, and then the speakers list, it was unbelievable what those people felt perfectly comfortable excuse me, and unchallenged sitting there in broad daylight saying that their vision is for humanity. You know, they, you know, if folks haven't had a chance to, you know, to look at those presentations or, you know, listen to what Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of Britain, had to say, you know, others, you know, in that environment, it is criminal that they are absolutely trying to snuff out humanity and to downsize us, you know, into, you know, a biometric security state of their making, you know. And I promise you, that is not a dystopian future that we want for ourselves or our children.
Well, you know, Deke, the international aspects we were supposed to talk about last, but since we've kind of, you know, gotten into it, and I'm not at 11:37, and Lori's looking at the clock too. I'm in unjustly accusing her of clock watching.
You're good. You've got 23 minutes.
All right, we're good to go. So, I mean, let's just kind of pick up on that. Then we'll come back to some of the national issues that we wanted to talk about. The whole business with Davos and the Great Reset are part and parcel of a major problem that we have in dealing with, you know, the kinds of policy aspects of what's going on in the United States and who's passing it through the Democrats and all the rest of the stuff. I mean, so you have a religious aspect of this climate change business, but you also have this whole, you know, Marxist socialist outright communist approach to trying to establish a one world government where supposedly everything's going to be fine and dandy, which we know is BS because it's never worked, never will. And as far as Americans are concerned, they can go to hell fast. But because you've got Kerry and Gore and other centers of public opinion here in the United States that support this crap, we have I would argue, and I know you feel the same way, a major challenge right here, right now. So what's your take on it? You mentioned that you've heard all of these, or you saw that they had 137 different, you know, presentations. Mm-hmm. What is your in 3 minutes, okay, what's your takeaway on this, and what do we really need to do to try to offset the gains that these people have made?
Well, everything starts local, as you know, keenly observed, right? Everything starts local. And so we must stop, you know, catering to our own narcissistic existence, okay, and stand up and take ownership of our local, you know, processes and, you know, our elected representatives, our boards, you know, our academic review. I mean, this is where it starts. And so it's not enough to say that we care about kids and to rail against Common Core. You know, it you know, what the left tries to do, Lou, is they try to paint us into a box, you know, into a corner, you know, as if we didn't see or did not understand, you know, like the Great Pacific Trash Gyre, you know, which is horrific to watch, right? If you've ever seen coverage of that, it is appalling what humanity has done there, right? And you know, but I don't believe that Marxism is the answer to that,
right?
Okay, and you know, the left is, I feel the left is destined to lose because they will never win the argument about freedom and liberty. Okay, they won't.
But they don't have to win.
No, well, they don't have to win, and that's exactly right. And part of it is they have now been able to develop a method, okay, whereby people take their own poison. You know, mm-hmm. You know, we are self-limiting now, okay, through vaccines and all the money and the effort that has been pumped into those. And when you look at the myriad harms that have been engineered into the supposed, you know, COVID vaccines, mm-hmm. or not vaccines, but the mRNA technology, it is unbelievable, you know, that we would have sleepwalked into our own self-destruction and mm-hmm. then be given the pablum to continue it. And so, you know, again, when we look at how do we counter the left, it has to be done locally. You start locally and you just keep going all the way up the food chain. You know, my concern is that the deeper we go, you know, into, you know, this biosecurity state, mm-hmm. you know, without challenging it, you know, and there's a bright spot, you know, Texas and Missouri filed yes, a lawsuit, you know, over the I think it was last week, end of last week, to basically nullify, you know, as illegitimate any action by the current Biden regime, and I use that word specifically, mm-hmm. to foist, you know, the biosecurity state and to basically punt or grant transfer, you know, authorities over Americans to the World Health Organization or any other, you know, international body. And so that's a legal lawsuit. You know, we'll see what kind of hearing it gets when it sees the light of day. But it's, you know, so where we're losing in lawfare. You know, mm-hmm. you know, the Chinese, you know, have used this particularly well in you know, not just planting the seeds but then being able to foment you know, egregious harms inside democracies and republics, you know, worldwide. And you know, because when they get inside of our system, when they're inside the lifelines, inside the wire, and they're able to you know, create havoc through right. lawfare, you know, that soon that, you know, there aren't too
it'll
many polities
collapse.
Out there. Yeah, there aren't too many polities out there that aren't going to be able to survive that, right? It's very serious. People need to, you know, wake up, read, you know, Carrie Gershannick's book, you know, mm-hmm. about political warfare. There, you know, there's another one out there by, you know, General Flynn, you mm-hmm. know, who just had another one out there on information warfare, you know. But it's, you know, fifth generation warfare. It's real. You know, we're living in it right now in this moment. And so, you know, to be able to push back on that, we have to be able to start locally, and work all the way up the chain. And we have to do it simultaneous.
Let me ask you a local issue, and it's also going to lead to the weaponization of the FBI and things like that, which is on the agenda anyway. But you and I had a conversation last week about Daphne and the development of these
smart cities.
Yeah,
15-minute cities.
Yeah, and you've got all these cameras and all like that. Mm-hmm. So what is your sense of, and I tried to get in touch with Kevin last week to talk to him about that, but I wasn't able to get in touch. I'm not sure why, but I'll follow up on that part of it. But the point is, you know, do you see that sort of approach is actually at the local level, and that if it's there, then we are into another one of these major episodes where we're behind the power curve, mm-hmm. and, you know, can we stop it?
Yeah, so in an update to that conversation we had last week, Lou, I did reach out to the Daphne, City of Daphne, and also spoke with Sherry, you know, Mayor of Fairhope, about this, and they both assured me that, you know, that smart cities and 15-minute cities are not on the planning menu for planning agenda for Daphne or Fairhope. Daphne asserts that the money to buy all of those new LED light poles is that money came from Daphne funds. You know, but my comment back to them was, I'm like, look, you know, we appreciate your transparency and your honesty. And they, and I want to be clear, they got back to us right away. Like within hours, they got back to us. But the, here's the catch with that. I've worked in acquisitions, you know, at the federal level before, and you know, you can move money around in a shell game when
especially if it's all this COVID money in the state.
Absolutely.
That they have these grants that come down. Right. So it's all part
that's
and
right.
parcel.
Whether it's
of it.
COVID money or Infrastructure Improvement Act or whatever mm-hmm. it might be, you know, it might be, and this may be how it flowed. It may have come down through federal DOT or Alabama DOT, and then they tranche the money out into, you know, big
right.
tranches, and then it goes into the local government without obvious strings, okay, although it's being what they'll say behind closed doors or in other meetings is that, you know, this is for X or Y or Z. And so, you know, I think that the city of Daphne and the city of Fairhope, you know, were being, you know, transparent and honest with this. Yes, I do. But we must also understand that you know, the person that may be answering your questions may not be in full possession of, you know, of all of the details.
Right.
And so, you know, it's you know, follow the money, right? We all know the adage, right? Follow the money, because that's where you'll find, you know, the bull. And so what I encourage people is understand that this is real and it's happening now. It's happening in places like Cleveland, Ohio,
right.
and in other, you know, Democrat-run
cities. The Davos
cities.
Meeting is not just about Davos.
Oh, it's not just about Davos. And so, you know, these 15-minute cities are being set up in London, UK, and they are so far along, you know, that it's scary how much. You know, I lived in the UK for, you know, for a long time in the late 80s and early 90s, and you know, loved that place. But it is absolutely terrifying to go back there and see how the modern London looks like China. You know, it is cameras, dozens of cameras looking at you at any point on any street corner. It's just like you were in Beijing. And so, you know, what they mean by this, and Oxford there at the northwest of London, you know, was one of the first to announce the 15-minute city. And so they're putting up barriers around the township of Oxford and basically trying to mandate or allocate certain amount of time that people, the residents within that area, can drive, you know, certain days of week, or you can only make so many trips outside of the barrier, the zone, the 15-minute zone, a year.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm telling you, it is very serious, and so that's now infected, you know, the United States, and we're seeing it in places like Cleveland, Ohio, and Minnesota and California.
Yeah, I mean, this all goes back to Agenda 21, and now it's Agenda 3030 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2030. So, I mean, those kinds of things have been there, and everyone's always kind of poo-pooed it, especially when we sent people to city council meetings, especially in Mobile, which really seems to be gravitating in that direction. Maybe not so much over here, but it's like, oh, you're just a conspiracy nut, okay? And the reality is that this state passed an anti-Agenda 21 bill years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the flaw was it didn't have a lot of teeth, number one. And number two, people didn't really take it seriously. And now the wolf is at the door, essentially. Mm-hmm. And now here we are. Now, talking about wolves, let me just kind of transition to the wolf being at the door at the national level with the weaponization of the DOJ, the FBI, and the whole movement towards away from, you know, equal justice being blind and all like that. What is your sense of this, and how deep is it? Is it just at the upper level, the Comeys and all those people that we saw struck who were hating, you know, Trump, and they were going to do everything they could to make sure that they saved America from Trump? And of course, the argument is, well, it's just at the top level, and we can trust the underlings in the FBI. What is your sense of this?
No, I think the Twitter files, and, you know, for whatever you think of Elon Musk, okay,
yeah.
The Twitter files.
Well, we're going to talk about
yep.
him, too, so let's just talk
Absolutely.
About him
let's
now.
Let's talk about him
as
now.
As part
right?
of how we can
That's
identify
right.
what's going on.
So I probably have equal parts admiration and revulsion for Elon Musk, right? Just because, you know, of the way that he is in certain issues. When he sold out to the Chinese, to the communist Chinese, and set up all of his battery manufacturing and half of his Tesla manufacturing.
Hasn't he moved some of that out of there now?
He has, though. Because he realized quickly that he was being raped in for his technology, right? And so, you know, that was a lesson. And I think he's such a smart man. I think that he probably knew going in, but he couldn't resist the money, and that's how the Chinese get you, right? And so let's go to the Twitter files, okay, and to your question about law enforcement. What the Twitter files prove to us beyond a shadow of a doubt is that it is not, absolutely not, limited to just a few bad apples, which is what, you know, the mainstream media and the polity, you know, our leaders in the polity have tried to convince us over, you know, these many years, I would say really since the Obama era, you know, that it was you know, oh no, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about, folks. It's just that one bad guy. We got him, you know, no problem, right? No, the Twitter files show us that there are now, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of bad Apple operatives, you know, at all the way down to middle management level. You know, when you look at, for instance, the censorship request, okay, that went into Twitter, you know, from almost every major government agency, and from names that nobody's ever heard about. Okay, these people are, you know, are like division chiefs.
This is why Nixon wanted to get rid of the bureaucrats. Mm-hmm. He knew that they were the enemy, and they were determined to get rid of him. And of course, who was Deep Throat? The assistant director of the FBI.
That's right. So it's, you know, I want to be clear that when we talk about Elon Musk, when we talk about, I think he's gone through his own awakening, but because of his very high intellect and his capacity and his wealth, okay, he's able to move his awakening along in a much faster clip than most of us, right? And so that's a good thing, okay? But, you know, I'm also, you know, just, you know, America and the world owes Elon Musk a huge debt of gratitude and thanks for buying Twitter, for using free market principles to force that issue. And what it does is it actually exposes our vulnerabilities along all other big tech and media, you know, and the left is already, you know, running as fast and as hard as they can with investment to try and deplatform him from Twitter.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing here, among other interesting things, is that historically, how does the citizens get their news? Primarily from newspapers, okay? Mm-hmm. And the evolution towards social media, which has no journalistic approach to what is being sent out there. I mean, you can talk about misinformation, disinformation, all like that. Those platforms are susceptible to all of that. I mean, the history of, say, the New York Times, okay, the paper of record, they had journalistic standards. Now they are the New York Slimes. I get that, but if we do not have journalists that are real journalists, if there is no journalist, you know, standard by which you can actually kind of rely on, then it seems like the whole edifice of the democracy is being undermined very quickly, because no one will know what the truth is. Mm-hmm. And so here we are, this whole question about what Musk is doing, and the fact that he's illuminated all these things gives us hope that we can fix part of this. But how do you really fix social media with the kind of approach that there was a group that was in the 1920s that had a major impact on journalistic standards. I can't remember the name of it, but Copeland or something like that. Mm-hmm. Those standards really were objectivity. You know, the New York Times found out that you could have objectivity, but we needed editorials for opinion because the world is complicated. It's not just black and white. So those kinds of movements, I would argue, worked well to inform the public. And then you had TV news. And even though TV news, you know, Walter Cronkite, you know, that's the way it is. That may have been BS, but there was certainly a standard, one could argue, that made sense. So I guess the question is, given where we are with everything that we've seen, you know, what is your sense of how we're going to be able to kind of maneuver through this maze of information, disinformation, Chinese information, TikTok, and all the rest of that. Where do we do? Where do we go?
Well, we can't fix them, so we have to fix ourselves. Okay, and the example that I would give you on that is that in 2014, after being on Facebook for about 7 or 8 years, I got off. I shut down my account, deleted it, and it was the best decision I ever made, Lou. I didn't have to worry about how many thumbs up and likes I had on photos or whether somebody commented or didn't, right? Or if somebody said something bad. I mean, it was amazing
how free you were afterwards.
Absolutely, how much more free I felt after I deleted my Facebook account. And so that's been almost 10 years ago, and I've never been happier. Yeah. And so, when it comes to addressing the poison, that it seeps into our lives, is that we, human beings, Lou and Deke and Laurie, all of us, we have to be more mindful about what we consume, what media we consume, what we allow into our lives. It's just like the analogy I would give, and share with the audience is, if there was a knock at your door at 1 o'clock at night, are you going to open that door and let a guy stand in there with a bloody knife into your house? Okay, so we've been shown the bloody knife. Okay, Elon Musk has done that. He's shown not just the bloody knife, but who was holding it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so why are we going to continue to let them in our house? Okay, we must exercise greater discernment and greater wisdom, and just get off social media. Okay, they can't. We can live without them, but they cannot live without us, and they will die. I promise you.
Let me ask you this, though. Given the necessity for an open society to have good information, is it a thought that some of these social media platforms should just be shut down? I mean, I'm not saying I'm in favor of that, but I can see that it's the Wild West out there. Mm-hmm. So how do we handle it, given what is necessary for an educated public, I got the school business, all right, but the educated public to know what's going on sufficiently to act accordingly?
Well, and this goes back to your, because it's all wound up in one big tangled ball, right? So now we're
one
back
ball
to,
of BS.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And now we're back to dog chasing tail, which is, well, somebody call the police. Wait a minute, the police were the ones sending the censorship request to Twitter, and not just that, but sitting in Twitter's offices, handling
and paying them money.
Oh, paying them money, taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Okay. So my point is this: is that because we are running on the hook here, is that we must understand that if laws have been broken, and in Twitter's case, they most certainly have.
Right.
Okay. We should be able to call the FBI, but we can't. Okay. So we need to figure out in a hurry. Okay, how to do that? Well, I would argue that Ron DeSantis in Florida, Texas, and Missouri, should be here in Alabama too. Okay, is that get these people accountable in red states under state laws? Okay, it's how it's got to happen.
Yeah.
You have to be able to prosecute these people under state laws within a state and make them not feel safe anywhere. And when you can prove that, and you've got case law behind you, that laws have been broken and harmed Alabamians. Now you're on to something.
Well, we have been on to a lot of things, and Laurie is looking at me, and I see that I've got 2 minutes to go, I think. Deke, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time here and the fact that, you've been able to, juggle all the things you have to do with your professional life and still, be a good dad and take active measures to try to move the needle in the right direction at our local level and even higher. I really appreciate the fact of everything that you do.
It's unbelievably good.
For those tuning in late, would you like to give a little summary of his qualifications and why he's here?
Well, sure. I mean, Commander Cox is a retired naval officer, 8 combat tours with the SEALs in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I think that he's not only got his military background, but he's a professional engineer, and right now he's capable of running platforms out in the Gulf or on land, and that's what he's doing in Texas. So he's producing a lot of good stuff for what we need to beat these climate people who want to shut down fossil fuels and all like that.
Thank you.
So Deke is one of the good guys, as is Judd, who's filming all of this, okay? He's giving a little Marine salute there. Okay, folks, so here in 1 minute to go, we've covered a lot, not quite as much as I wanted, but I do think that the next couple of weeks are going to be important in terms of setting the direction of where we're going to be going to try to bring issues to our state legislators who are going to start back to the session, which is always dangerous, on the 7th of March. We will have our Welcome Back rally on the 9th of March, a Thursday. But the point is that our Alabama Conservative Coalition, the Common Sense Campaign, other groups throughout the state are all working to try to move us in a better direction, particularly in terms of election integrity, as well as what's going on in education. Supposedly, Governor Ivey has decided that she now wants to make education her number one issue. BS. She had a chance to change the whole damn system 2 years ago. She did nothing, and that's why we would not support Ivy, and we went ahead and supported the Libertarians. Okay, I won't go down that road again since I am really out of time now, but you all get the picture. We have got to be engaged, and we are going to be engaged, and we're going to put things on the right track. Thank you all once again. Thank you, Lori, and thanks again, you know, Deke and Judd, for being up here today. Y'all take
welcome.
Care. Have a good week.
Thank
Bye.
You, Dr. Lou. Thank you, Deke. Some of the conservative news sources include Fox News, Breitbart News, The Daily Caller, One America News, National Review, The Hill, and The Blaze.
1819 News, too.
1819 News, if you're looking for an alternative.
And The Conservative Review.
The Conservative Review.
That's right.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou, brought to you by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181. This is a paid program. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or management. WABF, Mobile, Fairhope. Great music and memories now resuming regular programming.